Goeienaand luisteraars, baie welkom by Ek en my kind, hier by Radio Tygerberg 104 FM en ek natuurlik Neville Goliath. My aangename voorreg om weer eens met u saam te wees. U sal onthou die afgelope paar weke het ons gesels oor geesteswelstand en vanaand gaan ons hierdie gesprek voortsit, maar ons sit in 'n ander gee, maar ons, ek natuurlik Neville en saam met Sura, hallo Sura.
Hallo Neville, goeienaand luisteraars, welkom by ons program. Dit is die middel van November. Ons is al besig om die kersversierings is al op. Die kinders sit op hulle stoele en hulle is net besig om te studeer want die eindeksamen is daar en die jaar is onder ons uit. Maar ons is tog bly dat u steeds ingeskakel bly by ons program en ons hoop ook dat u waarde put uit dit wat ons die inligting wat ons vir u bring.
Ons het vanaand 'n spesiale gas in die ateljee en dit is Dr. Roxana Kemp. En sy is die hoof van skool maatskaplike dienste hier in die Weskaap, by die Weskaap Onderwysdepartement. Ons het dit nodig geag om met haar te gesels hierby vooraan wanneer ons gaan praat oor fokus in plaas op geslagsgeweld teen vroue en kinders. Dr. Roxana Kemp, baie welkom by Ek en my kind.
Thank you, Neville. Thank you, Sura. Thank you for having me here today. Yeah, it's a privilege for me to be here, specifically on this sensitive topic. So warm welcome to our listeners as well.
Now, gender-based violence, Roxana, what does this entail? I think everybody knows what it is, but we often forget what are the intricacies or the details regarding it. If we speak about GBV, what is it about?
Neville, GBV really entails quite... The topic is very broad. I'm going to try and just limit it to specifics for you. So it's violence really directed at specific groups and more so vulnerable groups in our community. So really, essentially it is around violence against children, violence against women, and then interpartner violence, and also violence against the LGBTQIA plus community. So that more or less, you know, summarizes... what's directed at specifically. But gender-based violence also take on different forms. So some of the forms with when it comes to GBV relates to violence in its physical form, where you have, you know, the beating, the slapping, the spanking. But then also a huge form of gender-based violence, often not reported, is that of emotional and psychological violence. And here we're specifically speaking about verbal abuse that often takes the form of threats, insults, intimidation, belittling, and then also emotional manipulation, huge form of gender-based violence that often goes underreported. Online abuse sometimes happens very subtle, but online abuse is something that is also on the increase and very rife. And then also psychological intimidation and victimization. Often people don't see that as a form of abuse. And then also we've got sexual violence that often relates to rape, sexual abuse, or harassment. Economic abuse also, people often don't see that as a form of violence. Where is financial control? Also, you know, depriving people from finances, and I'm talking about specifically within relationships, within households, that often borders on domestic violence as well. And then your institutional violence. Mm. Often you find that within the workplace, and GBV is often not only limited to the household or violence that takes place in the community. Often people forget that there's also a level of intimidation, victimization, very often in the workplace. So that's also a form of violence taking place. And then, violence against technology, within technology, you know, messages sent, and that's also a form of violence that is considered as gender-based violence.
Mm. Ek luister so na die bewusmakingsadvertensie wat op mense oor verskillende radiostasies kry en sê hulle, Suid-Afrika, wat het van jou geword? Mm. En ek dink die situasie waarin ons is, dat ons nou 'n spesifieke tydperk het waarin ons ekstra klem plaas daarop. Dit sê vir my dat daar is 'n hoë voorkoms. Hoe lyk die voorkoms daarvan? Hoe het ons getalle? Wat is die omvang daarvan? En wat word gedoen om dit minder te maak?
So that you right on track when you say it there's a suspicion of increase, definitely. The research really shows that South Africa is facing a serious crisis when it comes to GBV and is one of the highest rates of GBV worldwide, with the prevalence of almost 20-30% of women, children and the community of LGBTQIA plus community that is subjected to violence. And for that reason, in 2020, the president declared gender-based violence as the second pandemic in South Africa. And that really gave rise to the development of the National Strategic Plan for Gender-Based Violence. So basically that plan intends to alleviate some of the levels of violence that exist in our communities. And it also forces a whole of government and a whole of society approach in terms of dealing with gender-based violence. So that plan specifically has six outcomes, or what we call six pillars. And that plan really keeps government responsible for the leadership, the coordination, and also for putting a plan, a collective plan together in terms of how we manage gender-based violence in South Africa. So at the moment, the plan is sort of not being reviewed, but we've had a strategic plan to look at how does government really report on incidents of abuse and what is put in place to provide more awareness and prevention and support. What support services are there available within government and in, you know, the whole of society, if we look at NGOs and FBOs in the community, what is happening in that space? So there's really a move for the next 5 years to look at a more cohesive and a more collaborative approach when it comes to intervention. So yeah, it's definitely a way of keeping government departments and civil society involved, and also help to assist in alleviating some of the challenges. Because as we know, you know, whatever happens in the community or in the house, it spills over to the school. And we find that in our schools as well.
Ek dink maar net in terme van skoolmaatskaplike werk, nê, die aanmelding van kindermishandeling. Die aanmeldings rondom wat binne gesinsverband plaasvind, is, dink ek, nog nie so op die voorgrond binne in skoolverband nie, maar baie beslis die aanmelding van kindermishandeling. En as 'n mens dan gaan kyk na die getalle, en Roxanne, jy werk nou met die provinsiese getalle, nê, dan sien ons, dat is regtig geweldige toename en 'n onrusbarende toename in die aantal van kinders wat op kwartaalbasis aangemeld word as kinders wat slagoffers was van een of ander vorm van mishandeling, en dis asof dit eskaleer van een kwartaal na volgende kwartaal toe, nê. Dan dink ek op die voorgrond het ons hierdie gevalle van die dogter by Vredenburg, daar's nou 'n seun by Vredenburg wat weg is, wat niemand weet nie, 'n ouer dame wat aangetref word in 'n huis wat al op 'n vorige keer, wat niemand eens geweet het dat hierdie persoon vermoor is nie. So dis onrusbarend, dit is werklik onrusbarend wat ons sien gebeur op die oomblik. Ons het nou gesels 'n hele reeks programme gehad oor die keestes welwees van ons kinders in skole en ons onderwysers in skole. Die effek van dan nou gender-based violence, en ek gebruik die term, want lyk my die Afrikaans wil die lekker geslagsgebaseerde, nee, geslagsgebaseerde geweld is 'n moeilike term, ons amper wil ek sê die mooi Engelse term gender-based violence sê, het beslis 'n effek op die welwees van mense in alle opsigte.
So that you're absolutely right. Just to come back to statistics also, yes, there's a number of reported cases and it's on the increase every year. Not only related to children, but also related to, you know, to adults. But I think what's important to note is there's also a number of cases that goes unreported. There's a lot of people that do not report gender-based violence. And very often, you know, it's due to fear of retaliation. It's due to fear of, you know, being subjected to further violence. It's the stigma attached to reporting. And it's also the fear of people are not going to believe them. So there's that disbelief in, you know, when they do report, also nothing happens. Mm. So I think that's important to note when it comes to, you know, when we interpret stats, that there is a number of people that they are not forgotten, but who impacts on the stats not being a true reflection as well. So yes, gender-based violence has an effect on the well-being of our victims, whether they are children or whether they are adults. I think immediately, you know, there would be a response of them being in shock and denial. There's also high levels of anxiety and fear, especially if the perpetrator is still in the house, if this perpetrator is still in the workplace. So there's those high levels of anxiety and fear that often leads to depression. Mm. And often what we do find there, that gender-based violence in specific areas where there is a high substance abuse rate, with this poverty and unemployment, unfortunately, gender-based violence is higher in those areas. So it's often related to substance abuse. But what we do find is that, you know, when children and adults often go through depression, sometimes we do find suicide thoughts. So suicide ideation is a huge thing. Often we find that, you know, the social isolation, not because of the violence, because of the embarrassment linked to the violence, they isolate themselves from friends and from families. We also find them difficulty in maintaining relationships. Because of happened before, they do not want it to happen again in a different relationship. There's also that stigma and discrimination that people feel, that, you know, you're a victim and people see you for that. And when they are isolated, often there's that loss of support, especially social support, that eventually should be able to help them. And if they isolate themselves, it doesn't really help the situation that they find themselves in. So then they do find difficulty in seeking help. I think that's a huge thing for people reaching out, and hence the underreported cases that we do see. And then the lack of community connections also. I think they lose touch with that. Limited access to resources as well. So yes, I think essentially to recognize that, you know, everyone's experiences to GBV, it's unique. It's unique and it's different. And the impact on the mental well-being, it can vary. You might find someone being very resilient because of having a family as a support system, having, you know, friends as a support system, having finances to go directly to get the necessary support that they need. And then you find on the other end someone with no support structure. So that does affect the well-being of a person who has become resilient because of support structures, compared to someone who just struggled to bounce back. So yeah, it does affect. So your resources do play a role, and it really depends on your resilience, your recovery, and you know, your healing will definitely be dependent on you and your support system.
Roxanne, ons die afgelope maand, en nou voorbij is, het ons gepraat oor die welwees van opvoeders en van kinders en hoe dit impak het op curriculumlevering en die leer van kinders. Een van die dinge wat ons uitgelig het, is die belangrike rol van die onderwijser in die klaskamer. Nee? Die onderwijser is die persoon wat eintlik die atmosfeer skep vir welwees in die klaskamer. En as die onderwijser nou nie wel is nie, dan affekteer het wat ook al daar gebeur in die klas. Watter ondersteuning is daar vir onderwysers? Vooral in hierdie klimaat wat ons self tans in bevind, nee, waar onderwysers vrees dat hulle poste gaan verloor en die hele herrie rondom hoe dit plaasvind en sovoorts. Watter ondersteuning is daar vir onderwysers wat blootgestel is aan geslagsgebaseerde geweld?
I think firstly, Neville, one needs to look at when they are faced in a situation of gender-based violence. Immediate reporting. I think there's a level of what needs to take place immediately. So in terms of reporting, I think immediately it should be reporting, depending on the nature of the case. So it would need to be reported to SAPS. And I think once it's reported to SAPS, then the application for protection orders to make sure that they are safe will occur. If it is that, you know, it's GBV happening within the workplace, then there's an internal employee relations process to follow. But employee well, health and wellness is open for teachers. I think that's an option to explore. And then also looking at specific resources in
do
the community.
Do teachers really go for this employer wellness support, Rakshana? You're saying that we have something as in the education department that's available for teachers. But I think when a teacher battles with GBV, there's a gap between the experience of GBV and their readiness to report it. And I think that is usually our thing. Why don't they report? There must be reasons why they don't report. Well, what are some of those things that hamper their willingness to report?
I think, Neville, similarly to people not going to SAPS to report. Fear of victimization, fear of being intimidated, fear of losing their jobs.
I think there's also an element in van dat mense skaam voel. Nee, en ek dink vooral in onderwysers as professionele persone, soos wat ons mense ook kry, mense in gemeenskappe wat in 'n hoër inkomste klas is, dat hulle dit toehou, nee, dat hulle skaam voel dat iemand moet bewus wees daarvan. En dit klink vir my partykeer asof ons onderwysers ook voel dat as ek van die ondersteuning dien gebruik maak, dan kan dit teen my teel in die onderwys. Dan kan dit dalk maak dat iemand gaan daarvan boekhou en as ek weer aansoek doen vir 'n pos, dan sê hulle, maar die persoon kan nie cope met hom of haarself nie of binne in die huis is sulke goeders en dit kan nou teen my teel. Is dit regtig feitelik so of is dit maar mense se verbeelding? Wat sê ons vir hulle?
I think, Sura, as I said earlier, whatever happens in the community spills over into the school. So our teachers are not immune to GBV. And the reality is, you know, similarly to what our community experience when they have to report, our teachers go through. And you're right if I say that, you know, there's a level of shame, there's a stigma attached to it, and fear of not being believed. It's real. It's real. And with gender-based violence, always, you know, there is the other party involved. It's a sensitive topic when it comes to reporting and, you know, where you find yourself in the workplace. Because often one finds that it's, you know, it's those in authority. Not only in the household and in a domestic violence relationship, but when it happens in the workplace, it's someone higher. And fear of losing their jobs is a real fear.
So stap nommer 1 is dat hulle moet die moed skep om te rapporteer en daar is plekke om te rapporteer soos die polisie of binne die interne prosesse wat die werkgewer daar sou stel. So reporting is key, and then of course accessing the services of support that is available to teachers, because the teachers should understand that their role in the classroom is so important. And when we look at mental wellness, the mental wellness of the whole class as a community is dependent on what the teacher puts out there, and kids pick up on what teachers carry with them. Now, support for learners in the classroom, because learners are not immune to the impact gender-based violence has, because we don't know what happens in many homes, né? In die huise van kinders gebeur daar baie dinge soos die domestic violence is baie prevalent, as ek in die Engelse woord kan gebruik, is baie prevalent. Ondersteuning vir kinders, hoe word leerders wat blootgestel word aan geslagsgebaseerde geweld ondersteun?
We do, fortunately, Neville, we do have a psychosocial support services available to learners. So we do have psychologists linked to a grouping of schools. So every school would have access to a psychologist and a social worker. So support will be provided to learners.
Die vorm van ondersteuning wat gebied word, het ons genoeg dienste? Die proses wat gevolg moet word, is dit 'n proses wat maklik uitvoerbaar is? Hoe sien jy dit?
I think, Sura, when it comes to child protection, we work from the premise that because of the nature of the abuse, child protection really demands a multidisciplinary approach. And within education, we do realize that we're not the only discipline involved in the management of child protection. So we've got our Department of Social Development, we've got South African Police Services, we've got your Department of Health. So all the different role players playing a crucial role in terms of managing that case. But when the case gets reported from a school to a social worker, I think the first level of support will normally start. So it will be making sure that the child is safe. I think safeguarding the child immediately is a priority for us. And there we often make use of Department of Social Development or even SAPS if it be that, you know, a child needs to be removed the very same day. So making sure that the child is safe and then making sure that, you know, whatever has been reported, you get the other role players involved. If it is that the perpetrator, for example, is someone within the home, we don't remove the child. The perpetrator needs to be removed, so we will get that process running with SAPS, with the South African Police Services, and with Department of Social Development. So we would try and, you know, assist and support wherever we can, so that whatever has taken place with the child doesn't become a barrier to learning. I think that's a crucial role of the social worker and the psychologist within education, to make sure that, you know, whatever the child goes through, whether it is that the abuse took place in the community, at home, or even within the school, that we try and provide the necessary support. If it is that the longer term therapy or support is needed, and then we will make arrangements with the necessary role players to provide that support. But for us, bottom line is we would not want whatever the child has gone through to become a barrier to learning.
Ons het nou die gesprekke gehad oor die geesteswelwees en daar was elke keer hierdie verwysings na in terme van angstigheid, in terme van depressie, hoe dit presenteer, kinders wat dan nie skool toe kom nie, kinders wat lyk asof hulle ook gedragsprobleme het eintlik, die manier waarop hulle dit uitleef, selfs in terme van sosiale media en die impak van sosiale media, en ons het gepraat bietjie net so ligtelik oor cyberboelie as 'n vorm van geweld teen 'n kind, nê. En elke keer het dit na vore gekom waar dit 'n aanduiding was dat ja, dit impakteer op die klaskamer en dit is so belangrik dat ons dit vroeg moet begin identifiseer en dat daar vroeg intervensie moet wees ten opsigte daarvan. Maar nou, baie van dit wat gebeur daar binne in die huis. En die ouer is soms daarby betrokke, die ouer is, een van die ouers is dalk die oortreder, maar rondom die gesin en die vriende en waar die kind homself bevind. Meeste van hierdie geweld is iets wat binne die gemeenskap plaasvind. Watter raad gee ons vir ouers? Hoe moet hulle dit hanteer? Hoe identifiseer hulle dit? Hoe hanteer hulle dit? Waarheen gaan hulle?
I think, Sura, maybe to start with guidance to parents. For me, there's that immediate response and then this the ongoing support. So I think when it comes to immediate response, the first thing that I would like to say to parents is believe your child. Believe what your child is telling you and listen to your child. Children also want to feel that, you know, they are being believed. And as parents, I know it's difficult. Staying calm is crucial. Because remember, you're always a role model to your child. So overreacting and reacting in a way that might not be seen as appropriate could also be harmful for the child. So stay calm. I think trying to manage your own emotions is crucial to how one manages this process. Validating our feelings, I think it's important. To say to the child that, you know, whatever you are telling me, I believe you. Very often we see parents and we hear parents saying to the child, you know, it's because of you. It's because of this that you did. I think that's the last thing that children want to hear. Also, you know, if it is that medical treatment or anything emergency needed to take place, do the necessary reporting. Also track and you know, keep record of what the child has told you. I think that's important. So if there's any injuries in necessary for medical treatment, that really is priority. In terms of ongoing support, I really think emotional support, provide comfort. Provide a safe space for your child. Let your home be that safe space. Very often we hear that parents are the last person to whom a child is close. Teachers are normally the first person. So we want to change that narrative. Provide that safe space. Let your home be that safe space for the child. Encourage open communication. I think that's important. Be in contact with your child on a daily basis. It shouldn't be only when incidents like this happen. Yeah, I said, create that safe environment. It's crucial for the child to feel that, you know, this is a space where I can share whatever I can. I think also monitoring of triggers. So triggers are those little reminders that will remind the child of an incident that has taken place. Triggers like, you know, the smell of a perpetrator. If we take rape as an example, the smell of, you know, the person that raped me, the clothes that the person has worn, that specific blue shirt might be a trigger. The person might resemble or look similar to a family member. So even seeing that family member could be a trigger. The place where an incident has taken place. So it could have been, you know, on the way to school. So the child would be very evasive in terms of walking that path. So even just assisting in that process of managing triggers, the date of an incident also. Mm. It happened the 1st of January, so every year the 1st of January, try to assist in just managing those triggers. I think it's important. And if need be, you know, seek professional help.
Well, Rakshana, we've come to the end of the program, but before we close this program, in the weeks to come, we'll be entering the 16 days of activism against violence against women and children. South Africa as a country has adopted the 16 days of activism to commemorate or to draw attention or awareness to this. What are we going to do this year around? Because every year we have these orange flagged days where we focus on that, and it's necessary for this to happen. And in weeks to come, we are entering that phase again. What is it that the public needs to be aware of this year round?
I think, Neville, from a gender-based violence perspective, because we've adopted the National Strategic Plan for GBV, we really want to almost preach 365 days for GBV. So we shouldn't park it for 16 days. But from a 16 days perspective in education, normally what happens at district level, there would be various forms of awareness and prevention programs running within our schools, running from district office, and also running from the provincial office.
Yeah.
So there would be lots of communication in the forms of infographics. There would be awareness in the community. There would be videos. You know, there will be lots of stuff happening. So we've got 8 district offices, and each district office normally has and runs their own campaigns. So I would say to schools out there and to parents out there also, you know, there will be lots of collaboration with Department of Social Development, with National Prosecuting Authority and other organizations. So please, you know, whatever is happening in the community, please join in. It is a whole of government, but more importantly, it is a whole of society approach. So we really encourage our parents to get involved and to join in whichever campaigns that is initiated, whether it's at school or within in the communities.
Rakshana, baie dankie. Dankie dat jy saam met ons kom kuier hier op Ekker met Kind en gesels oor hierdie belangrike onderwerp wat ons nog voort sal sleep deur hierdie volgende paar weke. Gaan ons praat oor geslagsgeweld teenoor vroue en kinders. So baie dankie vir jou bereidwilligheid net om vir ons te kom deel rondom jou expertise en dit wat in jou veld gebeur.
Thanks so much, Neville, and thank you, Sura.
En daarmee sê ons totsiens.
Totsiens.